Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Junzy. My name's Juno.
And I'm Benzy.
And this is a podcast about our relationship to the world.
And how that impacts our relationship to each other.
All right. So this week we are talking about having children. And I'm interested in talking about the emotional and then also philosophical and ethical aspects of having children and then taking care of children. I feel like taking care of children, that's a huge thing that we'll do a separate episode that focuses on that. Yeah. But obviously we can't really talk about having children without there being some level of discussion about taking care of them too. So we'll go a little into that, you know? Mm-hmm. And the reason I'm interested in talking about this is because we had a conversation during the immersion, the circling immersion in Tucson when I was there, about whether or not people in the group that we are talking to, whether or not they wanted to have children or what role they wanted to play in childcare. And there was a conversation between me and another person where I said that I didn't want to have my own children. But in terms of giving birth to them, but that I always want to be deeply involved in caring for other people's children, you know, and even be a sort of co-parent to them. And then she asked me, I wonder, what is the actual difference between that? Why is it that you wouldn't want to have the children? Mm-hmm. And for me, what I said at the time, I've developed my thoughts more since then. But what I said at the time was that, which I was surprised by because I didn't really consciously know this, but a big part of it is the emotional attachment that I know that child will have to me just because I gave birth to it, just biochemically, whatever, nervous system wise, that is how it would be. They would have such an intense, you know what I mean, parent-child attachment to me, that level, it scares me to have that level of power over them. Mm. That's when I realize it's the power. But I don't want to monologue. I'd love to, I know I'm just going off right now. I have a lots to say.
Yeah, I'm a little confused by the difference between that and a 12-year-old who's had you as a figure in their life every single day.
Mm-hmm. I do think, I mean, that is different. And the reason I know it's different, and so one, there is research, there's studies that have been done. We have the data that the person who gave birth to you and the people, the caregivers who were there every single day from birth, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. That is actually the primary attachment, emotional attachment, mm-hmm. that has the most power to either create really significant mental illness if there's a rupture there or not, you know? And it is very different from someone being in your life as a caretaker who isn't that primary caregiver from birth, and especially someone who gave birth to you. We see that in adoption studies, how damaging it is for a baby to be taken away from its birth mother. That is a very strong indicator that child will have severe mental illness. Yeah. Just from not having access to the mom anymore.
Yeah.
So it is extremely different.
Okay.
Yeah. And I also, with this child who I'm a caretaker of, who is now a former friend of mine, but I was friends with her for many years. But this child, it would be the reaction that he had when I moved out of the house. Mm-hmm. You know, I know that that reaction would be so different if his mom was like, well, I'm going to move out of the house now. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, it is just worlds apart.
Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know. Do you have other directions that you're interested in going in, or do you? Yeah, I want to check in with you before we go further down a specific line of thought.
Sure. Yeah. I guess I'll just bring into the conversation that I would like to have kids and generally mm-hmm. plan to. I see myself in a spot of, if for some reason I couldn't or didn't have kids, I feel okay. That is also an okay life for me to live.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, I'm coming from a different place.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But you really want to give birth to children that are considered yours, like they belong to you? Or, yeah, what does that look like for you?
Yeah. A huge part of it for me is the love I have with my mom feels so grandiosely unique that I would like to have that type of relationship in the other direction. Something like
What
that.
is the quality of that relationship? Can you say more about what that is that you want to have with a child?
Yeah, it's hard to fully capture or even moderately capture, but it's just, I'm so impacted by my love with my mom that no other person I know can dig into my soul in the same way. It's just
You
different.
know,
Yeah.
yeah.
I feel a deep level of understanding with my mom that I don't with anybody else. Even if we talked, even if I explained who I am forever, there's just things my mom and I can understand together that I can't catch anybody else up on. Something like that.
I am hearing you talk about this. There's a lot of critical questions that are coming up for me that I feel bad about having a lot of these critical questions, but it brings up so much for me. And I'm wondering,
Yeah.
can I, are you open to me?
Why do we have a podcast if not for
I want to
that?
prod you. Yeah, I'm going to prod you about these things. And the point of me prodding you was not to try to get you not to have kids. Okay.
Yeah.
Just to say that. I respect everybody's right. Yeah, everybody can have kids. I get it. Lots. It's a very human thing. And I want to be a big part of your child or children's lives. I hope for that to happen,
Me
you know?
too, yeah.
That sounds amazing. Yeah. It's not, yeah, I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I hope to be a part of your
Yeah.
children's lives too.
I'm not gonna have children. I'm not gonna have children. One, I'm already 40. And I'm not in a position to be ready to have children at all. So if I ever were, it would be years from now. And then I'd be like, what, 43, 45? That's not gonna happen. So that's not gonna happen. Just logistically and emotionally. And I'll get more into why, because there's more. And it connects to the questions I want to ask you. So I guess, yeah, what's coming up for me is that one, it is so common for children to feel the opposite that you do about their parents. To feel like no matter how much they try to explain what's going on with them, who they are, that their parents really never understand who they actually are or meet their emotional needs. And so when you say that your connection with your mom is the reason, is one of the reasons why you want to have a child, is you want that connection with that child to happen in the other direction. I guess I don't see that as necessarily happening. And it's not because of you as a person. I think you know what I mean? It seems pretty unique to me what you're talking about that you have with your mom.
Yeah.
So I guess, how do you feel about the fact that it's really not guaranteed? And it's very 50-50, and maybe even less likely that your child would actually ever have that with you.
Yeah, I feel positive that me and my child won't have the exact relationship with my mom because I'll be very different than my mom was raising me.
Yeah.
It's important if anybody has children to not be too attached to any specific result with them. Not that I think I could fully emotionally prepare no matter how much I practice, but so I imagine, is it still worth it to me to have a child if they cut me off and don't talk to me for the rest of their lives? Because
Yeah.
that's the thing that happens to people. And it's a thing that could
Right.
happen to me. And when I sit with that, I'm like, yes, it's still worth it to have a child. So that's a huge motivator of it makes me, it's one of the things that makes me feel like I want to have a child is my relationship with my mom. But it doesn't feel like a requirement. Having a child who doesn't speak to me is less enticing than having a child where I get to have a super deep love for the rest of it. Even though moms I know who have their children cut them off do still have a super deep, unique love for their children. So I don't want to dismiss that. It's such a human, such an intense human experience. No matter what happens, I don't think I want to miss out on it.
Mm-hmm. So it's more about just having the unique, intense human experience. Yeah, I guess I'm wondering what the requirement is. If all of your ideals and desires for it don't work out, what would make it still worth it to you? That's something that doesn't make sense to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. If they turn out to be a person early on, you're like, I just don't understand that we're not connecting. Yeah. And that just never happens.
Yeah. I mean, it's really too late at that point. So.
But I'm thinking about it now before you do it. I don't, yeah, why? It's interesting that doesn't scare you away from it. And I wonder why.
Mm.
What's still enticing about it, you know?
Yeah, well, there's a way I cannot know until it's happening, you know?
Mm-hmm. All right, I'm going to put my cards on the table.
Okay.
Which is that. So a recent thought that I've had, and so for the audience to know some context, in the past, I have been a pretty strong antinatalist. I would not describe myself as an antinatalist now. I do still have a lot of antinatalist philosophical perspectives on childcare and political perspectives, but I'm not at all against people having kids. You know what I mean? And I would never go around telling people you shouldn't have children. You know, I don't think people are doing something wrong. I don't know. I feel wrongness isn't even really a relevant term, because I think that people, humans, and most, you could say, the majority of living beings, all living beings, I guess, evolved to reproduce, to replicate their DNA. So I'm a fan of the selfish gene theory. Our evolution and what we've become as humans is just the result of the beneficial adaptations, mutations that we've gone through that have made our genes better at being, our DNA better at being replicated. And so the result is this human, you know, thing that gets the DNA really pretty well to a spot to be reproduced through sex. And that pretty much, for the most part, explains a lot of our impulses. And for most people, yeah, that's why they have the impulse to have kids, is my perspective. Mm. Is their brains have evolved to tell them, have kids, because that's what replicates the DNA. That's the only reason why it would keep happening.
Yeah.
And I think that's a bad reason to have kids. You know what I mean? It's not a reason. It's just an instinct. And I don't really believe a lot of the conscious reasons that people say, I want to have kids.
Mm-hmm.
I don't believe that's really, I don't know. I think they're all just things that have been produced, those thoughts and feelings, through the evolutionary process. And to me, that is not something that we should. People are going to give into it and just live that way, and that's fine. And I do lots of things based on human evolution and instinct. And that's one of them, having children, that I won't participate in. And I've never really wanted to, but yeah.
Yeah, one of the things I thought while you were talking before you got to the end there is I was like, oh, I actually think a huge reason I want to have kids is not for what they'll do for me, but I think I can provide this really unconditional love experience to a human from birth. And that excites me. And also, yeah, I don't believe in free will, and I think people aren't really making decisions, and everything is kind of an inevitability of just how we are.
Mm-hmm.
So when you say you don't believe people's reasons, I think reasons are all just us kind of making shit up to explain to ourselves what we're doing.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
For anything.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I would agree with that for the most. Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And for some reason that I don't have a conscious, you know, I don't actually, when I think about it, I don't have a conscious reason for why I have had no desire to have children for, yeah, my entire life. I can't think of a time where I was like, oh, I really want to have kids. I don't know why that ended up being that way. It could be because of the specific form of abuse that I experienced. but then also there's lots of people who have experienced the kind of abuse that I've experienced and still want to have kids. That's very common. Mm-hmm. So I do think there is something about me, and I don't know what it is. And it could be the reasons, the way that I'm thinking about it, but it could also be things that I'm not even conscious of that are leading me to not have that impulse. And I'm curious about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think I have good arguments for why people actually shouldn't have children.
Mm-hmm.
I do. And I want to give them. And those arguments don't actually matter in terms of people's decisions to have children. And I would never expect my arguments to influence people not to have kids.
Yeah.
I just want there to be an awareness of this that hopefully will maybe impact the way that people treat their children is what I would hope for.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And so one of my arguments is that I just don't believe. Oh, you were saying actually earlier, you were saying that you want to have kids partly because of the level of love that you feel you could give them.
Yeah.
Correct? Would you?
Yeah.
Finish that thought. Because it connects to what I wanted to talk about, actually.
Okay. That's the thought.
Oh, just that? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. It's interesting because my argument is that for the most part, people are having children because they want something.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? It's an inherently, to me, I've always thought of it as an inherently selfish choice. And I'm not against people being selfish in general.
Mm-hmm.
I have a problem with the selfishness in this instance because it's creating a whole person and a life.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? For the parents to extract from that child.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be getting love from that child. I think a lot of people have children because they want to feel that kind of deep love and attachment from someone. And they're like, oh, if I have a child, that child's going to give that to me. You know? Yeah. They want to have a mini me. They just want to make a copy of themselves. They want children to do work for them. That's very common.
Or to
take care of them.
Live out the dreams they wanted for themselves.
They want to live vicariously through that child. It's all about the parent.
Mm-hmm.
I do also think, I'm looking for some way that you saying, oh, I want to give love to that child is actually selfish.
Yeah, I'm sure.
To fit my narrative.
I'm sure it is. Because I want to have the experience of giving a lot of love to a child and seeing. I want to witness what they turn into.
Mm. Oh, God. See, that just sounds like a weird experiment to me.
I think it is. Yeah.
And I think it's like, I'm not down with that. I do think that's wrong. I think that's wrong, actually.
Mm.
And it's okay. You know, it's okay. And I do have a problem with it. Creating a person to see what they become. That sounds like, I don't know. That sounds like Frankenstein to me. It's like that movie. What's that movie where they make that woman as a scientist and there's an alien? Is it an alien or lizard? DNA? Yeah, Splice.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just like, I just want a child so much. But that child grows up with so much suffering because of having to navigate this world. And I think that's actually what all children are going through.
When I was younger, when I was a teenager, I thought life began when I became a mother. I wasn't a real person until I was a mother. And that was really intense. And then when I became a part of our old community, I was never anti-natalist, but I moved into like, oh, I'll never have a child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
For a lot of the arguments. And then when I moved to Tucson and I've become friends with so many more people who, first of all, love being alive, which was less popular in our old community. And and I really love being alive. Also spending more time with mothers who love being a mother. It really opened my heart back up to the desire to have a child, but in a new way where before it was like, I don't exist until I have a child. And now I super feel like I exist. And I would love to help bring a life to this earth.
Yeah, I definitely see that there's an underpinning. Our different approaches to this is highly influenced, like you said, by kind of this difference in loving being alive, our perspectives on life. And I have a pretty severely pessimistic perspective on life. And it sounds like you, I mean, you're an optimist, you know what I mean? In so many ways. And that's a pretty fundamental difference between us.
Yeah.
I see life as actually not worth living. I am not going to kill myself. You know what I mean? I have been suicidal many times in the past, as you know. But yeah, I just, yeah, the level of pain that I've experienced just far outweighs the pleasure in such a way where I'm like, I don't think this is actually so cool that it's better than just never having been born. Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we're living in a hell realm, honestly.
Oh my God. That's so like, this funny is hell. To me. Yeah.
I don't understand how it's not.
Yeah. Like, I feel like I, which I guess I want the audience to know, I have a severe abuse history as well. So it's not like I just grew up well and I'm all flowers and sausages, you know, but.
Oh my God, the flowers and sausages. Hilarious.
But.
Well, and you grew up really poor too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Right.
You've well, experienced- and it was like an extreme fluctuation over and over because it was dependent on who my mom was dating.
Which is so hard probably to experience that fluctuation in and of itself, the changes.
Oh my God, it was super freaking hard.
Yeah.
So yeah, I just want to add that context in so people aren't just, well, yeah, you've just had an easy life, you know?
You're just so privileged.
Yeah, yeah.
Above me or something. Yeah, which is not the case. Yeah. Yeah.
I know people are having many, many different experiences on this planet. And mine is heaven is a place on earth and I experience it regularly. Sorry.
That's great. That's your particular filter. And I'm not saying, I mean, and I have my filter. That's so interesting. Yeah.
I could, it would be easy for me to say hell is a place on earth too.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. So interesting. Yeah. Okay. Huh. So that's just, just a difference in our dispositions, our, you know what I mean? Our temperament.
Yeah.
And what causes that? I'm so curious. What is it? What is it about our, because I don't think we can say it's just an experiential difference. There must be something different, I think, fundamentally about our makeup that led to you perceiving your experience one way and me perceiving it differently. And I want to say I am somewhat optimistic about my own individual life. It's just more so the suffering that I've experienced, that I continue to experience. Just, I experience a lot of pleasure, too, and it just is never, it's not enough to outweigh all the pain. And then all the pain that I experience from witnessing what's happening to other people. That's also what makes it nearly unbearable to me, as just looking at the world and being like, oh, this is just nuts. The level of suffering on the planet is just, I'm reading Dante's Inferno or something. I don't know. It's interesting. And it's not meaningful. I don't think it's meaningful. I think it's just, that's part of what it is. And I am very into narrative therapeutic approaches and building one's own narrative arc of their life. And I've done that. I have a redemption story for myself in terms of my journey and becoming more empowered and, you know, all this stuff. I have that. And it still doesn't mean that I think life is worth living. Yeah. Or that it's worth creating new life to experience this. I just could never put a child. I will never put a child in a position to have to experience what I have experienced or what I am experiencing or any of the other suffering. Yeah. I think it's very cruel. So you're a monster.
Yeah.
Is what I'm saying.
Because I suffer a lot too.
Yeah, I know you do.
I super think it's worth it.
Whoa.
And I talk to my experiential soul or whatever, and sometimes when I'm crying, I'll exit myself and I'll be like, is this what you wanted? This is why you're here on earth, to experience these things. I talk to that piece of myself sometimes.
I don't know what an experiential soul is.
Oh yeah, I just made that term up right now.
Oh, okay.
But it's just the, within my system of spiritual belief, which I have no proof for and no interest in proving, is that some level of consciousness decided it wanted to come be a human through this body for a while. And so I'm providing the human experience to it.
So you're just a vessel. You're just being used by consciousness.
I'm a vessel of experience, yeah.
You're being used by... I'm being... But that is how... See, that's how my pessimistic...
Yeah, yeah.
So you're... Yeah, we're being used. The fuck? That's bullshit, actually.
Yeah. Well, and you can leave if you it's want like, to. You can just...
But I can't.
It could.
No, but I... Here's the thing. I can't. Okay? It's actually very hard to make the decision...
Yeah.
...to actually kill yourself.
It's because your true soul wanted to be here. I'm being hyper.
I know you are.
I'm being performative right now, so people know.
Yeah. For me, it's for me to have to get to the point where I can override all of the programming that I've evolved with to keep going, to survive, I would have to be in a pretty horrible situation. It would have to get really bad, and it's not that bad right now. And there's good things. I'm excited about lots of things in my life.
We have each other.
100%. Yeah. I'm not saying, I don't want to be clear to the audience, I'm not saying my life is bad. You know what I mean? I'm not saying I don't want to be here. I think a lot of the reason for why, even though I feel like I'm seeing things in a way where I'm like, I see that this is actually not that great. We're all suffering way more than we're experiencing pleasure. How does that make sense? It's because I evolved to keep living, to replicate my DNA. I'm a slave. That's what I mean. I am a product. I'm being used by my DNA. By evolution, not consciously, but that's what it's been. That we are slaves to this evolutionary process that does not care if we're happy. You know what I mean? It's just about, and I'm just like, this is bullshit. Mm. I hope no one kills themselves from watching this episode. But
yeah, me too.
That would be horrible. Or would it? Sorry.
Well, and yeah, what's coming up for me, which doesn't dismiss anything you said, is that I think actually I'm not is the vessel and I'm the experiencer, you know? So
what is the I'm? I love how we started with childbirth and now we're getting into what when you say Benzie is the vessel and I, how is I separate from Benzie?
Yeah, I'm this individual moment of experience.
Oh, but you're okay. The I is what we use to describe the self, which would be the Benzie.
Yeah, I don't know how to describe it then.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think I get what you're getting at, though.
It feels like an I.
Hmm. Yeah, my perspective is that the I, what I experience as, what I'm thinking like, oh, this is me, this is the experience I'm having right now. Whether it's the evolutionary view or your spiritual view,
yeah,
in both cases, this experience right now, I'm being, it is, it's been created for me to have a self that experiences it, including experiencing pain. I am being used. The I is being used. It's just you can't separate it from the experience. Because that's the whole point.
Yeah.
Do you know what I'm saying? So to me, yeah, they're inextricable, but I'm still being used.
Totally.
Like the way that children are being used by being created,
yeah.
Their existence is the use.
So I'm just kinkier about it because I'm like, yeah, I'm being used.
Right.
I just got to get kinky, you know?
Fucking existential kink. Have you read that book?
No, I haven't read any books ever.
Well, okay, I think you would actually love that concept because it's basically very close to what you're talking about. Yeah. Even if you like, oh, I want to send you a podcast episode about it.
Okay.
Would you listen to it?
Totally.
Okay. Yeah, this woman's whole theory is that, yeah, whatever pain we're experiencing, a part of us, to her, it's a part of us, kind of like shadow work, the unconscious. Wants it. We created the situation that we're in mm-hmm. because there's some need that it's meeting. We want to experience it and it might be painful and that's what's kinky about it. That's why it's called existential kink.
I love that.
And she's like, if you can just admit that this is actually what you want, admit that what you want is this, and you get to fully experience the joy of knowing I'm getting what I want.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Then you will eventually not be trapped by it.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? If you can just fully let yourself enjoy it.
Yeah.
So it's like, if you're really poor, well, there, and which, you know, I have a lot of criticisms with this kind of idea, but she would even say, if you're really poor in an abusive relationship, admit that you want that and admit what's pleasurable about it and have the existential, the kinky pleasure of it.
Yeah.
Obviously, there's a lot of problems with that. You know what I mean? And I also see what she's saying.
Yeah.
Totally. Yeah.
This conversation is reminding me of why, when we were doing rad, why I decided I didn't want kids, but I was an anti-natalist. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because this existence question, I like existing, and I actually don't think it's cruel to bring a child into existence, personally.
Mm-hmm.
And the reasons I didn't want to have a child at that time is because I was convinced that being a parent would be a miserable experience.
From what you witnessed in Detroit.
Yeah.
Like here.
Not just one person, but lots of the conversation was about the misery of mothers. And I still am afraid of that misery. I am terrified of being an isolated mother in a house alone with a baby constantly. And I don't know who I would become in that situation because I didn't get enough sleep the other night and I became completely emotionally dysregulated. I don't know. What I do know is the way the world I would be willing and want to be a mother in includes communal raising of children. So I just want to bring that element in because we're in this existential talk. But that was my big shift in going back to wanting children again.
Yeah, I'm glad you are bringing it back to
the
practical, the real. Yeah. Yeah, I think that's really important and something that a lot of people who want to have children aren't thinking about.
Yeah.
You know, build. Do you have enough support to do this without it being so miserable that you're hurting and also you might hurt your children?
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And a lot of people are not even thinking about that. And it can be very difficult for people to build that. I think you are in a unique position to have that. And I want to be part of that.
Yeah.
So, well, yeah, I think you're gonna have that for sure. Right.
Yeah. Well, and I think the isolated mother is a fairly recent part of human history. I don't know for sure, but
I think it depends on the culture.
Okay.
Yeah, I guess it depends on what we think recent is and what culture we're talking about.
Yeah.
Because I think mothers were still fairly, what I would consider fairly isolated for many centuries in a lot of parts of European history.
Yeah, I'm considering, when I say recent, I mean within the last 500 years.
Okay, fair. Yeah.
Which is fair. Only 8 generations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool, I'm glad you contextualized that.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Something I'm really afraid of with having children, and then I know I couldn't handle if it were on me all the time and consistent for me, is the sleeplessness.
Mm-hmm.
Some people can do this where they can just not sleep, get enough sleep, and they're just still on the next day. I'm destroyed the next day from one night of not getting a full 8 hours of sleep.
Yeah.
I'm, a different person. And so I'm like, that's part of why I don't want to have my own kids. Is because I know that I am so sensitive to that.
Yeah.
But if I can see it being more possible. I still wouldn't do it for the reasons I said. But yeah, I would need people to be on the clock, several people to be taking shifts to get up and deal with the kids so that I can just sleep.
Mm-hmm.
And it would have to be pretty equally distributed. It couldn't disproportionately fall on me either.
Yeah, yeah.
That would be how it would have to be. I could do one night a week.
Yeah.
And there would have to be 6 other people, you know what I mean, or whatever. And which would mean in the early years, well, that's not true. I was going to say then I wouldn't be breastfeeding, but I'm like, no, people just pump and then have the milk for overnight. And that's what a lot of childcare doulas do for moms is they get the pumped milk and feed the kid in the middle of the night. So that's fine.
Yeah. And there's wet nursing if we live communally with other people.
Yeah, I'd be so into that.
My friend Lily and I have talked a lot about raising children together, and she's a super late night girl and sleeps till 10, 11 a.m. And I'm an early morning woman. I get up at 4. And
my God, it's perfect.
So we would, our thing is I would be the day mother and she would be the night mother, you know?
Like, oh my God. That's really cute, actually. Yeah. I love that. Oh my God.
Yeah. And I think.
And one of you is both babies breastfeeding. I don't know. I'm imagining both babies breastfeeding. Yeah. That'd be so cozy.
Yeah. So I think there's a world of mothering that can be co-created. And I want to do that with way more than one person.
Yeah, totally. Yeah. If I could produce milk, I would wet nurse, but I wouldn't be, you know what I mean? I don't know if that's possible how to get that
you
to
can
happen.
Do,
but
you
I
can
would,
take
if I could do
it,
it,
I think.
I would do that. Hmm. Oh, you don't want me to be a wet nurse for your child, do you?
What makes you, where did that come from?
Because of the way you were, you're like,
I mean, oh, I was considering the effects on your body of randomly taking hormones.
It might actually be good for me. Oh, you know what? Yeah, I don't know if people who are going into menopause can do it, though.
Yeah, I'm not sure.
I wonder. Anyway,
I mean,
it's
women have cool had babies into. In their 60s. So
crazy. Wow. Yeah, totally. I'm saying maybe taking the hormones would be good for me.
Yeah,
because I would need to be on hormones anyway. You know, depending on what they are, I don't know how much of each kind of hormone.
Yeah, we'll talk to a doctor about
you'd
it.
Need to take. Okay. Yeah, the other thing for me that I think about is how easily overstimulated I am. I'm an extreme introvert. I get exhausted from just socializing with adults who I really am talking to pretty easily. So I know my fear is that even if there's a support system around me, if I am the primary, Yeah, I don't want to be primary. I don't ever want to be a primary caregiver of a child because I get so tired of people so easily and it puts me into a very careless state. My brain switches into get away from me. I don't care about you. I only care about taking care of myself very quickly and easily.
Yeah.
Because I'm overstimulated. So I'm worried about the effects of that on a child who, again, is so attached to me and all they want is for me to love them all the time, unconditionally.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just a person who I think would easily turn into shaking that baby or something, which I don't want to do. I don't want to do. I'm just saying.
Yeah, yeah.
And that happens to moms. You see this when that is why moms will sometimes shake their babies. You know what I mean? It's because they're at their wit's end. But obviously in this community setting, there'd be other people taking care of the kid. It would not get to that point. But I'm still worried about that child feeling emotionally neglected by me.
Totally.
You know,
and that's a huge part of my forgiveness journey with my abusive mother is this imagining being a teenager, because she was a teenager when she had me, in the early 20s. And this thing needs you all the time. Just all the time. And you can
barely
take care of yourself. She could, you know, she could barely take care of herself. And then I needed her all the time. And
yeah,
no wonder. Not that I'm saying it's okay to abuse your children, you know. No wonder she couldn't handle it. Especially her coming from abuse. She was in her most basic tool set of things to use because she hadn't grown... You know, she hadn't had the opportunity to grow and learn how to do all that stuff. And then she suddenly has to manage another creature. It's hard for me to be mad at her for it.
Yeah, that makes total sense. Yeah. That's really, it feels really sad. That's something that keeps happening. There's that cycle that is not stopping for a lot of people. And I think you're the one to break that cycle in your own lineage.
Yeah.
You know, but it's sad to know that's just continuing with so many other people. And what I want is to stop it. I want to stop people from having kids who are in that state. And I also would never actually support any type of actual barrier to people being able to do that.
Yeah.
Because that's so often, that's controlling as fuck. And I would never do that to someone and their body. And and I also just am angry about it, too. I don't want people who are in that state to keep doing that to kids by bringing them into the world. And I know that part, you're a product of that. And you're amazing. And I'm glad you're here in my life. So, yeah. But still, it's painful. you know.
It makes me want to create more mothers and children and other people taking care of children too, not just mothers,
mm-hmm.
who can see that a different world is possible.
Okay.
Through enacting it.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're creating the alternative that is healing this cycle of trauma.
Also, I have no doubt that the kids raised in my community will have problems and be angry about things that happened to them as children.
Yeah.
I do think being a child is an inherently traumatic experience, no matter how good and loving your parents are.
Mm-hmm.
People not being able to take care of yourself, having other people make decisions for you that don't always make sense, that mm-hmm. stuff is hurts.
Yeah. Yeah, being powerless is the foundation of being a child.
Yeah.
Really. I think particularly with the way that we view children, a lot of, you know, that is the norm in a lot of our society.
Yeah.
But I also think regardless of that, just being a helpless creature, you know what I mean? You're powerless for a lot of your life.
Totally.
You know? And that is, yeah, that power dynamic is, yeah, there's going to be damage that happens that's unavoidable. And that's part of why I don't want to have a kid, because I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that to them. But I know that I'm already doing that to them just by being an adult in the world with children.
Yeah.
It's unavoidable. I know that I've done that to, I won't say his name, I've done that to, you know, my friend's child as a caretaker. It's unavoidable, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So I guess the only, the solution is just to try to, the approach that you were talking about, just try to create the alternative to, I don't know what I'm trying to say. I think just trying to be better in any ways that we can.
Yeah.
With the reality that people are going to keep having kids and we can't stop it, and it would be wrong to stop them, you know? So, whatever. You know, that's my it's just working with the fucked up situation that we're in, because our DNA just can't stop fucking. I know. I feel like I sound like such a basement dweller geek right now, where I'm just, it's our DNA. It's the evolution that we're prisoners of. I just sound like such a loser.
You're so cute. I don't think you're a loser.
I mean, I don't actually think I am either. I just think you sound like the really cool. There's some characters that have developed in this episode, which is I'm the negative, like, no, it's all bad. And you're like, well, but another world is possible. You know what I mean? Yeah.
You're the realistic cynic, and I'm the dreamy optimist.
You got to have both, I think, together.
Yeah, that's why we do so good together.
And that's why I'm going to be part of your child's life.
Yeah.
But I'm going to teach your child about nihilism. Not in the way that I'm thinking about things, but I want to teach kids about philosophy.
Of course, yeah.
And absurdism,
mm-hmm.
you know, and creating creating the meaning of your own life.
Yeah.
Which I'm sure you'll do too. But anyway, yeah.
Well, one thing coming up for me is this duality of, I have grief as I get older that I'm going to be an older mom. I'll see less of my kids' life, and I just won't be. Because having a young mom, there's lots of negatives to it, and there's lots of things about what my mom and I could do together, be together, because of our smaller age gap. You know,
mm-hmm.
And then my mom is 53, and I have friends whose parents are 70, you know, and my grandma is 70. My great grandma is still alive. And every year I don't have a child, I'm increasing the gap, you know, and I don't have but I do think I'm also becoming more emotionally mature. I'm going to be able to be a better, more loving parent every year as well.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, that is this cost benefit space that I have some grief in. Yeah.
Yeah.
So just adding that to the conversation. It's not a point or anything, but.
I mean, I think,
Yeah.
I'm just processing it. What are there specific? Yeah, I guess I don't know totally what that experience, what the desires are for an experience of being closer in age. Are there, I mean, I get totally just wanting to have more time with your child, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm also wondering, is there a specific type of experience that you're looking for that you won't be able to ever have with your child because of the larger age gap?
Maybe part of it is even the aspect of growing up together. My mom and I have done a lot of that.
Oh, wow. That, like, sickens me. Sorry. Thinking about that, because of my own experiences with my mom.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, but keep going. Yeah. Ew. Okay.
Just be close, some kind of level of closer to understanding culture and life. And I think every year I exist farther away from 16, I forget a little bit about what that's like. Something like that.
That's a good point. Yeah. Just not remembering, not being able to relate to your child.
Yeah.
And what they're going through.
It's something I actively try to work with, but even when I'm reading books and things, characters where they have this like, oh, if they can't pass this test, it's life ending, or this thing they're working on, you know? And I'm at a point in my life where I'm like, oh, you're going to fail at so many things in life and you'll always find something. High emotional stakes very rarely impact me in books. And I even feel annoyed by them most of the time because I'm like, this doesn't actually matter, you know? And I could see, you know, especially as I continue to get older, having an even harder time. When my children are teenagers, I'm going to be in my late 50s or 60s or something, you know? So, yeah, I might even be, it's going to take a lot of conscious effort to stay engaged with the emotional experience of young people.
Yeah, with the stakes that they are feeling, instead of being dismissive or being like, I just don't even know what you're worried about. Who cares, you know?
Yeah.
And for them, this matters. And then that could feel really, yeah, you're being brushed off. You're not being understood.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? Yeah.
Yeah, I'm watching the show Wife Swap a lot, which I actually think is super relevant to how different people see raising kids. And even a thing of the moms are like, you're going to dress like this to go to school. You're not going to wear your normal clothes. And oh my God, like,
Jesus.
Going, to me, that's such a disconnect for what it's like to go to a public school. And the really women I'm spending time with now who are still so traumatized by their social rejection in middle school. You think you're doing a thing that's 3 days long. This literally may have a lifelong traumatization, sending kids in an ugly outfit to school in middle school. Like,
oh, yeah.
I feel my chest at the impact of it. And yeah, I guess totally. I want to keep engaging with this fear because I want to keep engaging with the intention to not dismiss how important things feel to young people. And how important they actually are. That's the thing is, I think it actually is important.
It is important. Yeah, it's not just that they feel that it's important. It is an actual, yeah. It's kind of like when people say, oh, things are social constructions, but that doesn't mean they're not real.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Whatever it is, race, gender, etc. Yeah, these kids, we would feel totally different about this as adults. Very different. Although not all the time. We have a lot of that same type of stuff too.
Totally.
But, yeah, there is a real impact, social dynamic that is going on that is not just how they feel about it. It's, yeah.
Yeah.
I think it does matter. And it can actually really hurt them. I think that's important to recognize. Yeah, and it's making me look back on a lot of the responses that both me and my friend who has this child, who I'm a caretaker of, have responded to. A lot of some of his emotional difficulties that we find to be very trivial and for him, they're huge, and it was hard for me to connect. I think I did have a much easier time connecting with him about it than his mom. But yeah, fashion and social standing in his friend group and that kind of thing, and not being things that are seen as embarrassing that me or his mom could do when we're around him, and that he doesn't want his friends to see. We're like, oh, that's so silly. Like, we're going to do it. We're going to be ourselves. And I'm glad we feel like we can be ourselves. And also, that does have a real impact on him. It's not just a stupid thing, you know? Yeah.
Not that I think you should perfectly protect children from social pain, but yeah.
Yeah. But just, I think it's important to take children's experiences seriously.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm glad we can agree on so much.
Yeah, we disagree on a lot. And I think when it comes to a lot of the basics of childcare, I think we agree very much in a lot of things. Mm-hmm. And the things that we disagree on, I think would be, I don't know, I guess we'll find out. But yeah, I think we share a lot of values around caring for children. So, mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. And I also, we haven't really, we're not going to go too much longer, but... Mm-hmm. Something we haven't really talked about in this episode is the body cost of physically having a child, which I think is a huge reason a lot of women don't have children. Mm-hmm. So
that is also another reason why I don't want to give birth to children.
Yeah.
Yeah. That sounds like a miserable fucking process. And it's been reported as very difficult from people who are pregnant, have been pregnant.
And it has been reported as magical from other people as well.
You're right. That's true.
Yeah.
You're right.
I don't want to erase that.
I don't want to erase that either. Yeah. I think it has been reported as magical and difficult at the same time. And that's an experience that can be a very cool experience, actually, to have them both happening.
Yeah.
You know, the stress and pain and the magic of that transformation. And yeah, it sounds like a very powerful experience that I just don't need.
Yeah.
In my life. Yeah, I'll do other things that are painful and magical at the same time.
Yeah, and I hope you're there rubbing my belly and singing to the baby, and I think it'll be great.
That's so cute. Yeah, have your baby, but I can't believe it's weird I'm saying this after all this. I mean, you're going to have it anyway, so what? Just, yeah.
Yeah.
I'll be excited and support you and, yeah, motivate you.
Yeah. 2028, you guys. Be prepared.
Is that really the timeline?
My Gen Beta baby.
Oh my god, that's so funny. Is that it's gonna be Beta? Is that what it is?
Yeah, yeah.
Is 2027? Are we going into Alpha soon?
I think this is the last year for Alpha.
For Alpha, yeah. Who are the Alphas? I feel like I never hear about them. I just hear about the Zs. The Alphas aren't old enough yet to have a cultural influence.
No, Gen Skibbity Toilet, which is already over 6-7. That's Gen Alpha.
That's Alpha? Yeah. Oh, I've really been just conflating Z with Alpha.
Gen Z is in their 20s now.
Okay. And now Alpha. What's the highest age of Alpha? Alpha now? Teens?
Yeah. Yeah.
Early, mid-teens or something?
Yeah.
Okay.
Even though I bet there will, when we're categorizing, there will be a whole category for the COVID kids.
Yeah, there needs to be a category for the... I mean, there is. Yeah, the COVID kids. So. For sure. Aw. Poor kids. Because that straddles also the Z Alpha.
Yeah, yeah.
Divide.
Yeah.
Yeah. Weird.
The COVID cuspers. That's what we'll call them.
I don't like that. I don't like that. That's a little mouthy. The COVID cuspers. Yeah, I don't like that.
Okay.
Cool. I mean, we'll definitely do more episodes about childcare. Mm-hmm. There's so many different topics to go into, and just children in general. But I think I like the conversation we had about having kids specifically.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I thought this was a great episode, and mm-hmm. I'm really happy you brought the topic in. I completely forgot the topic till you said it, so it's great.
Oh, wow. It's okay.
All right, guys. Cool. We want to know, are you having kids? Do you think it's wrong? Do you enjoy being an isolated mother?
Why would that be a question? What? Oh my god. Do you enjoy being an isolated mother?
Well, because we're saying that's a horrible experience. Maybe somebody's enjoying it a lot.
Oh. So weird.
This has been Judy.
Yeah. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next episode.
Ciao. Thank you for listening to the Junzi podcast. As an independent show, we rely entirely on support from listeners like you. Subscribing, hitting the notification bell, and leaving a comment are incredible free ways to help us grow. If you want your thoughts featured, YouTube is the absolute best place to comment. We prioritize long-form YouTube comments over our short-form clips. If you want to dive even deeper, we host a special comment reaction episode at the beginning of every month, available exclusively on our Ko-fi. Ko-fi members get ultimate priority on questions, and higher tiers can even join us directly for group video hangouts. Check out the link in the description to see all the perks. A massive thank you to our founding supporters, Devin, Bara, Juliana, and Keith. See y'all next time.